Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Let's Talk TEFL podcast. So I'm Jackie and joining me is Jennifer. Hey, Jennifer.
Hey, Jackie.
So I'm just going to apologize in advance for my poor sound quality. If you hear anything in the background, I have some water damage. There was a leaking sprinkler in the unit above me. So I'm living in a small hell of industrial fans and dehumidifiers and basically living in a sauna. Inside my own house. So I turned off most of the things, but there's still a couple of things on. So if you hear buzzing in the background, don't worry. It'll be all fixed up by the next time we record.
Yes.
And
if
Jennifer,
you hear
you
any
have...
knocking, that is my side of things, because I think just on the other side of the wall is a pair of tennis shoes going through the washing machine. They are not mine. I have no control. I'm very sorry.
So please come back. What we're saying is the sound quality will for sure improve for the next. Well, actually, we're recording two episodes today. So this one and the next one, but then after that, it'll be good to go. All right. So today we're going to talk about modal games and activities. So first of all, what are modals? Modals are words like may, might, can, should, will, would, just. And they're used for things like giving permission, talking about abilities, possibilities, giving advice, making suggestions, or obligations. So this is very common in ESL, kind of like beginner and intermediate textbooks. And I actually really like teaching modals because there are a lot of fun activities you can do.
Yes.
All right, let's jump into it. So Jen, what is your first idea for a modal activity?
My first one is my favorite activity. One that I suggest all of the time whenever it is possible, and that is the agony aunt, because regardless of your students' abilities or how shy they might be, how reluctant they are to use English, everybody loves to tell other people how they can improve or improve their lives. So, so agony aunt, and of course, you can do this in different ways. You can either get like real advice column articles and maybe rewrite them to reduce the language if necessary, depending on the level of your students, or use age appropriate ones, obviously. So you can find ones that are like aimed at kids online. Like these days, obviously, it's so much easier to find any kind of realia that you want online. But just you can just give them questions that you have found elsewhere that people have and have them provide their own advice. Or you can have the students write out something pretending that they are looking for advice, or have them make an actual question of something that they would like advice about. Although that can be pretty personal. So, use your own judgment. And then switch and have someone else provide them advice. And that can be a an individual activity, like a writing activity, or a think pair share, where they have their own question that they would write, they would read the other person's question, write their answer, and then talk about it with them. You can do it as a small group activity where pairs or small groups are given the same question, the same topic that the advice is asking about, and they can work together to come up with the best solution for the problem. There's so many ways that you can do the activity, and it always goes down well in my experience. Yeah.
I really enjoy this activity, and if we're talking about giving advice, then 100% this is kind of my go-to thing that I do. So the next one I'll talk about, if you're doing abilities, like I can play soccer, I can't play tennis, that kind of thing, is a survey. And surveys are kind of my go-to activity that I use in my classes. So I will make up questions on a sheet, and maybe like 10 or 12 questions, like can play piano, can cook well, or can speak three languages. I don't know. So just different things, kind of depending on the age and level of your students, what you want to put in there. And so I put that, and then I put another column with name, and then I put another column with extra information. So all the students will have to stand up and circulate around the class asking people, can you play the piano? And then they have to find someone that says yes. If that person says yes, then they write the name in, like Jennifer, and then they ask a follow-up question. So if I said, Jennifer, can you play piano? And you said, yes, I can. I would write your name in. And then I could think of a question, a follow-up question. For example, how many years have you played piano? And if you said 7, then I could write 7 years in that extra information column. So that's about it. It's quite simple, and it takes a few minutes to make your own survey. But yeah, it's interactive, student-centered, covers a range of skills, and is perfect for abilities.
Yes, that is really good. And it is obviously quite adaptable to whatever vocabulary you might be focusing on. So if you're doing sport vocabulary, or if you're doing, school vocabulary, if they're pretty elementary, that's, the textbooks follow a general samey kind of order of lessons. Whatever it is, you can adapt to that kind of survey. And I love the add-on question. I think that's what really takes it from just being a little get up out of your chair and practice this very specific language to something that actually gets the students talking. Even if the students talking is only one or two extra sentences, that's more than what they would have done otherwise.
I always make my students ask a follow-up question. That's my secret weapon, I think, to actually helping students speak English. It's easy enough just to quote, anything off a piece of paper. Yes, I can. No, I can't. And it's just kind of becomes this like parroting activity. Yeah. But if you make students ask a follow-up question, they actually have to like think for themselves and ask a relevant question and write down a little bit of the answer. And so it just levels it up to make it like way more of a thinking activity as opposed to just walking around doing something that's very easy.
Absolutely.
Yes. All right, Jen, what's your next activity that you have?
My next one is a Likert scale worksheet, and this can be done solo as a reading activity, or it can be done in pairs as a speaking activity, whatever. And so if you don't know a Likert scale, that's just like any kind of survey you've done where you've got like 5, strongly agree, whatever. Well, in this case, to make it to go with modals, the answers would be like will, might not, or won't. And then you can put in time frames according to the student's age and ability. Like if you have 8-year-olds and you're like, you can maybe leave out decade or whatever, but you can just ask questions like, do you think you will do X? And X can be any kind of activity and obviously highly adaptable to whatever else you're teaching or whatever vocabulary you want to recycle. And then put in some time frames. Do you think you'll do X today, tomorrow, in the next week, in the next month, in the next year, in the next decade? And then the students can just, tick their little boxes. And obviously, if it's just a very simple reading activity, that's pretty low level. The level up is the discussion, either in pairs or in small groups, where they can compare their answers or, take it to the next level of, you think you're not going to do blah, 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 that the other people at the group do think they're going to do. Why don't you think so? Whatever. Obviously, that's a bit more advanced. So it does depend on your student's level. But I think the level up is definitely the discussion that goes with it.
I like that, though, because it can be, you can use it for very beginners, kind of without the follow-up.
Yes.
Question in the discussion, or it can be kind of for intermediate and even higher level learners. If you have a discussion and follow-up questions and all of that kind of thing. So it's quite a flexible activity, I think.
Yes. It's okay, my favorite kind.
Yes, exactly. That can be adapted for like a lot of topics and a lot of different vocabulary and kind of all of that. So that is one of those. My next activity that I have is the secret job. So often modals are kind of combined with job vocabulary in terms of like have to, don't have to, mustn't, and that kind of thing. So If that is the case, this is the activity I do. So I have students think of a secret job inside their head, and then they have to give some hints about that job using modals. So for example, if they think of like a teacher, for example, they could write some clues. And I always get students to start with the most general clues and then work to more specific ones. So a general clue might be they don't have to work outside. And then they have to work with people. And then maybe like another kind of general-ish clue. And then kind of the giveaway one would be they have to work in a school, something like that. So then once students are done, I get them to write maybe four or five clues about it. Once students are done, if it's a small class, I'll generally just do it with the whole class. So I'll read out each one and then kind of get students to guess and what the job is. Or if I have a big class, I'll put students into groups of three or four and they can kind of just read their clues. And you can kind of give out points if you want for like the first person to guess, or like, I don't know, you can make a little game out of it, or you can just kind of do like a fun little interactive game, I guess, or activity, but not for high stakes, if that makes sense. So yes, yeah, either way works well.
The game with no even pretend points.
Yes, exactly. So just kind of a, you know, and I like that it gives students a chance to get some writing practice with these sentences. And yeah, it's just kind of a fun little activity if you have jobs. And then doing, what is it? Possibility or abilities. Yeah, something like that. Obligations, I guess. So, yeah. All right, Jen, what is your next one?
My next one is similar to the agony ant, but a little bit faster pace and different, a little bit more think on your feet. So it is giving advice and responding with an excuse. So student A would say something like, you should blah, blah, blah. You know, you should study every day. You should help, you know, clean up your bedroom, whatever. And student B has to respond with an excuse. I would, but, you know, I would study more, but I don't have time. I would help clean up my room, but I'm too lazy, whatever. So, yeah, it's just kind of a fun little activity where students get to think on their feet and come up with some good excuses why they can't do reasonable or advisable things.
I like that. It's very simple, but students can be a little bit creative and come up with kind of some funny ideas. And obviously you could set them up for it. Like, I can't clean my room, or like, I would clean my room, but yeah. So stuff like that, just kind of choose like interesting starters, and then you'll come up with some good excuses for sure. Yeah. Okay. So the last one we have for modal activities is two truths and a lie. So this is kind of one of my go-to icebreaker activities, and it also fits in really well with the modals and using can and can't. So I get students to write down three statements, and two of them are true and one of them is false. So example, I can play piano. I can cook Italian food really well, and I can, I don't know, just whatever. I can play tennis. And it's easy. I get students to use can instead of can't, because if you say I can't play tennis or I can't play soccer, I don't know. I mean, it's a little bit like difficult to really know if that's true or not. So I make them use the positive statements. And once everyone has written down their three statements, and then if we have a small class, I'll just do it together as a whole class. So student A will read out their three statements, and I just write quick little notes on the board, like piano, tennis, cook well, something like that. And then I have in the hot seat. So the other students in the class get 2 minutes, and they can grill that person on what they said, like, what is an A scale, and what can you cook? And so they ask kind of these questions to try to uncover the lie. And then at the end of those 2 minutes, everyone in the class votes on which one they think is a lie. And if they chose correctly the lie, they get 1 point. So at the end, I always kind of joke, we know the best like police detective, the person who uncovered the most lies out of the people. And if you have a big class, it's kind of not that feasible to do with about more than 10 students. So then in that case, I'd put students into small groups of like, say, 5 or 6, and kind of just do the same thing in a smaller group, and kind of just appoint like one of the captains, and they can kind of be the timekeeper and the point person as well. And if you teach adults or teenagers, that's easy enough to do with a little bit of supervision. So yeah, so that is my two truths and a lie.
Yeah, and two truths and a lie is one of the activities that I like to do where it's a moving around activity. So one of the things I would do is number each space at a table. So like seat 1, 2, 3, 4. And so every table has a seat 1, 2, 3, 4. And then so like all the ones from the first group, well, then they'll go to another table and all of the twos will go to another table, whatever. And so then they can do the same activity with some different people.
I like that. Yeah, they won't talk to the usual people. If it's their friends, they might already know. But if you kind of like break up the friend groups, then it'll be more of a mystery which one is true and which one is not. So,
yes.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's true. But the reason that I usually do that is just so there's none of the faffing about of where am I going to sit if I can't sit at this table. I'm just like, okay, right. All of the ones are going to come to this table and all of the twos are going to come to this table. And then when you sit at the new table, except for like all the ones sitting at the one table, like most of the students will have a new number and then you can sort of redirect them so they get a new group if you want to do it a couple of extra times.
Okay, so that is it for modals. I'm going to put the article from my website about modal verbs, and there's way more activities and games and lesson plans and other resources. And then you can also check out my book, 39 ESL Vocabulary Activities on Amazon. And there's a version for kids and a version for teenagers and adults. So I'll put the link up there, and there are a ton more ideas for teaching vocabulary like this. And you can find all the podcast info at eslactivity.org/podcast and all the links to my socials and all the other good things. And Jennifer, where can people find you?
This podcast.
Yes. And also Jennifer has a YouTube channel, Teach Travel Learn, so yes. I'm sure you could also find her there. Okay. And we apologize for poor sound quality, and if you don't feel like it's bad, then that's great, but if you do, we apologize. And catch you next time, everybody.
Bye. Catch you next time. Bye.